Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the annual report work group call for our continued discussion on report topics. Today we have with us co-chairs Carolyn Peterson and Aaron Mary, and work group member Christina Carabello. And I'll hand it over to Carolyn now to get us started.
Great. Thanks, Cassandra. Welcome, everyone. And good morning. I think we're meeting a little earlier than we usually do, but it's great to get a good start on the day. I hope everyone's having a good summer and staying healthy, and I look forward to making more progress today. And I'll pass the mic to Aaron.
Yeah, good morning. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us this morning. It is bright and early, but it's a beautiful day. Hope everybody's being safe and that you and your families are staying safe. And let's get this thing started and get into these topics.
All right.
Carolyn, do you want to kick it off, and then I'll take it up halfway through?
Sure. So as we have on our agenda, we'll review the meeting schedules and topics and then finish up our list of potential topics that we've been discussing the last couple meetings and then start into the crosswalk, which I think will be interesting and spur a lot of good discussion. And we'll wrap up with public comments and a quick review of what our next steps are. Next slide, please. So I think we're all pretty familiar with this slide at this point. We're on our fourth meeting, and we've got, looks like, seven more to go. But we've got a good six-week break there before our next gathering, which will be September 16, the week after the next full HITACH meeting. Next slide, please. And then here's kind of where we're at in terms of bringing forth our product to the full committee. We'll have a brief update at the September meeting. We think some more substantial discussion with HITACH members in October and November, and then we'll look at the draft of the final document in January 2021 and look to get approval in February so that document can go to the national coordinator and then on to Congress in March. Next slide, please. So let's get into that document that topics we've been talking about for the last few meetings. Next slide, please. And we're skimming down to page 7. We've gotten quite a lot done so far. And I'm going to put on my glasses and see if I can read this. I think at this point, we have a number of things that have been carried over from previous years' discussions and previous reports. And we could spend a lot of time rehashing these, or we can just kind of go through the list one by one and say, yeah, are we keeping this again, or is this something we've covered so adequately elsewhere that we don't need to call it out separately, or is it something we can take off the list now because the world has moved on? So I see the first topic is health information exchange, and this looks at the new study on care coordination across specialties, New York cost savings from HIE use. There was an AHA survey, data briefs. This, again, gets at the interoperability area, and it was something suggested by ONC and our partners on the report. So.
Yeah, to me, Carolyn, it's a no-brainer. We keep it, but I do think we cover it in multiple areas, but this continues to get more and more critical. In fact, kudos to another HITACH member, John Kansky with Indiana. They did some fantastic COVID-19 HIE work that was published recently that I read and saw. So there's some good work going on out there about HIEs and the power and value of HIEs.
Okay. Christina, any thoughts?
Sounds like something we should keep. I like the approach of that you said, just let's go through this list. Yes,
okay.
No.
Then I'll do the abbreviated version for all the rest. Unique device identifiers, how do we feel about that?
The world has definitely not moved on from UDIs, but I haven't, besides like the Pew Charitable Trust and some other good work going on, I really haven't seen too much recently about UDIs. Christina, what do you think?
It came up a couple times in our work group meetings under USCDI. So I hesitate to take it off.
Yeah. I think it's important. I haven't seen recent topics on it. But I mean, it's critical, right? I mean, we need to know, you need to have lineage of what happened, you know, with a patient got a medical device and where the medical device came from and if it needs a recall. So it makes sense to me.
We can keep it on the list and just bill it probably like others as an ongoing concern with no particular issues right now. I mean, I think it's fair to say we have an open list of things that we're always watching for new developments, even if we're not wrapping our arms around it at any given day.
Yeah. And one thing to note as we continue to kind of expand upon telehealth and remote monitoring, this might be something that just becomes, like when we do our crosswalk, a topic that has a dotted line that's becoming increasingly important as those initiatives continue to expand.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Sharing data with the research community.
Thumbs up.
It's huge.
Yeah. Okay. Health IT support for opioid epidemic response.
Thumbs up.
This seems like it's kind of fallen by the wayside in the whole COVID situation, but I've also seen stuff that talks about how the opioid epidemic is getting worse because of the way we've had to deal with the pandemic.
Yeah, I agree with that statement. Major issue.
HL7 fire standard. And that was part of the NPRM, so I don't know how we can say that it's not on the list, but
I mean, the only thing I would add
by this line item. So.
Yeah, not just fire, but also maybe APIs, right? I mean, which is a little different in general. But you're right, fire was covered in the NPRM.
Okay. Protections for data generated outside the HIPAA framework. It's on my radar, obviously, but I'm one person, so.
Yeah, I mean, look at you just saw 23andMe just got acquired, what, a day ago, 2 days ago, or whatever they're doing, and I mean, by some European giant that's going to get all that data now. I mean, look, I've been saying this for years now. These companies that fall out of jurisdiction of HIPAA are a problem, right, in terms of consumer privacy and trust. So I think it's a huge issue.
I'd agree with that.
And international data exchange and privacy considerations.
Well, as much as I support this topic, I haven't heard it much lately.
I haven't either. And in fact, there was a recent thing I read that the European Union is considering either redoing this or pulling back portions of it. Apparently, there's a lot of legal action going on in Europe around. I'm not the expert on this. We'd have to get the OCR and others to weigh in to tell us. But there's been some movement on this topic in general. So I am curious what will end up standing. But to Christina's point, I mean, besides having to comply from it with data sharing and companies that, like, we do research studies with in Europe and others, I haven't heard this really taking too much of an effect on U.S. hospitals. Maybe it's just not in the mainstream media.
Well, and I think a lot of hospitals don't really get into international patient care so much. I mean, so
right, or like research. Right? Like,
too, but
yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm feeling okay about leaving it on the list just because we live in a global world now, and I think that there will be some people
agree with
who
that.
Find that to be a problem or a concern. Okay. State data exchange and privacy considerations. This is kind of like the other side of the national level.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yes, I think this is a big one.
And cybersecurity?
Nah, nobody cares about cyber. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's still important, even in a pandemic.
It's even more important during a pandemic, believe me. Jeepers.
And patient-controlled data collection, access, and sharing?
Yeah. This is critical. This is so critical and such an issue in terms of standardization, harmonization of what happens where, and that whole health equity conversation we've been having. Just amazing how much work needs to be done here.
Christina, any thoughts?
Yes, 100% agree. Very important.
Machine learning and AI in healthcare?
Yes. You know, it is interesting. I do at some point want to propose during a high tech that we come up with a definition of what we believe artificial intelligence or augmented intelligence actually means. I think, again, I love our friends that are, you know, in the marketing world and in a non-healthcare provider world, but this term is being really misused in the general space, and it's starting to creep into provider language because they're not understanding what artificial intelligence or augmented intelligence actually means. So I think it's important because we need to get clarity and we need to start really defining what does this mean.
Yeah, I like looking at it through that lens, Erin.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. Let's go on. And then finally, digiceuticals, our old friend. I have to confess I haven't seen a lot on this recently, but then I haven't seen a lot on anything recently except COVID, so I wouldn't assume that.
Yeah. So having crawled this space for some time and looking at this, it was very, very much an issue that was burning at the beginning of the year. It tended to quiet down, and so to refresh everybody's mind, digiceuticals is a software or some sort of technology mechanism that is meant to treat a comorbidity or some sort of condition via electronic means. So sleep apnea, all those kinds of things. And if you recall, before COVID hit, the whole spectrum was open. Now everybody has seemed to focus to pivot on COVID-related items, whether it's home temperature monitoring or something to that effect, or enabling telemedicine. So this space got quiet, but I don't necessarily know if development stopped. I'm sure development's gone on. We just haven't heard about it. So to me, I think it's important to keep on the list to understand where is this market going, because the worry, as we've all had, is a couple of components. One is a cyber component. Two, there's a privacy and security, obviously, component. Where does HIPAA stop and start? What is FTC component? And then three, there's the patient side of things, which is how do they know how to take charge of their own health information and what kind of recommendations they can take and those sorts of things. And how does this whole thing regulate it and control, right? So that we do no harm. That whole dynamic still needs to be explored, in my opinion.
Yep, I agree. And then we have this other list of other potential topics. It looks like these largely come from ONC and AI. OCR, patient right to access, that kind of dovetails on what we just talked about in terms of the importance of patient rights to access. Health IT certification violations enforcement by the DOJ and HHS OIG. There's the ONC research agenda, the burden reduction. That's been a thrust of ONC activities over the last year and probably even further back. Precision Med, ONC and the Precision Med Initiative, VA activities, things like connected.
I would add with the VA, the only component I would add, I think this is great, the VA one, though, I also would say the health information exchange. If you recall, at one of the high techs, like one of the COVID high techs that we had in March or April, was during that time frame, we talked about the DoD VA data sharing that was going on. Particularly as they migrated or migrating to the Cerner platform, and then tying that back to Commonwealth. It was an initiative that the DoD and the VA were going to start sharing data with Commonwealth to start getting data out there in the community, vice versa. Again, it was specific around COVID, but I think in general. So I do think the Department of Veterans Affairs activities is important, but we should add health information exchange from the VA and the DoD to the general community and back and forth, because so many of those service men and women are, you know, flowing into our hospitals and whatnot. We want to make sure that data is following them as appropriate.
That's a good point. Yeah, I would think especially in COVID times, you would be seeing even more of that because people aren't in a position to schedule visits and care.
That's right.
They got to do it now.
That's right.
The health IT response to the COVID-19 pandemic, I'm assuming that we'll have a section on that just because we had a couple of meetings that were pretty heavily focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
Are there more topics on another page yet? I think there's a couple more. And, of course, reimbursement is part of that. More issues related to the COVID pandemic. There's a number of different points there, but I'm thinking that's all probably in one section, even though we break it out by different topic areas, but I'm thinking it's one section where it talks about how it affects all these areas.
Mm-hmm.
If we can see what Michelle thinks in terms of structuring it. But patient matching and verification, that continues to be a discussion consideration, and particularly with the HHS technical assistance and ONC's patient identifier report. I'm not seeing anything in this group that strikes me as something that should not be included. I think there's some variation in how much coverage things merit. Is there anything here that either of you want to kick off the list?
I think this is great. I think this is all spot on. On the patient matching verification, I would also just put data standardization on there as well. I think there's a Senate bill proposed even this morning. I forget the two senators, but it's bipartisan legislation to introduce United States Postal Service validation and verification of street address, right? So that way you can normalize at least the street addresses in the EHR, something we've been talking since the days of the Policy and Standards Committee, you know, all the way till now, that this is an important component. So, you know, even if we can't get to a unique patient identifier, some strategy of validation so that, you know, when you're technically looking for data, you can query on a primary key because you trust that the data is normalized, is critical, right? Especially right now. So I agree with this section. I'm good with the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree as well.
Okay. Well, it seems like we have a pretty solid list of topics then and some feedback to help the team working on the draft of the report. It's so comprehensive, you could almost say nothing else will need to go there, but since we have another 5 months of the year, I won't say that. I'll just say we have a really good start and hopefully we don't need to expand yet more. All right, should we move on to the crosswalk?
Yeah, let's do the crosswalk. Let's go through this
thing. Okay. You want to start walking, Aaron, or do you want me to walk some more?
If you want to walk a little bit, I'll pick it up, whatever.
Okay.
Midway, whatever you want.
Okay. So this crosswalk, we're hoping will help us kind of conceptualize where to put things and how to help ITAC and other people who use the report understand where to find things and show how it all fits together, since we have some information that fits in many places and you could say the same thing five different times. We don't want to do that. So we'll just start by going down the list of landscape analysis topics and then talk about the gaps and challenges and opportunities. I think the first few of these are fairly easy to identify, but as we work through this crosswalk, there will be places where there's just a lot of boxes that we need to fill in. So we're here beginning with the technologies that support the public health. This is our new target area, inspired by our experience with COVID. The first topic is the exchange of clinical data for public health purposes. The gap is that public health authorities have interoperability challenges in terms of collecting information from clinicians and organizations and labs to manage reporting. The challenge is thought to be needing standardized codes, data, and terminology to document COVID-19 diagnosis, treatment, and reporting across clinical care settings. And the opportunities for health IT would be to improve interoperability between public health reporting systems and EHRs, and to accelerate use of data standards to improve situational awareness for federal, state, and local government emergency response. I think that's a fancy way of saying being able to know when you're about to have a bigger outbreak or a spike in your area. Then the proposed recommendations, recommend activities for HITECH would be to suggest HHS guidance on minimum necessary data sets for exchange with laboratories, especially for test order entry and case reporting. We've heard multiple times that's a problem. And to hold a hearing to understand stopgap solutions implemented to improve reporting capabilities and assess whether additional long-term solutions are needed. So do we have a workaround that can be expanded and implemented everywhere? So how does this one sit? Do you think we've adequately captured the issue and the challenges and opportunities, or is there more to do here?
So I'm going to talk in generalities, and what's interesting is for people that are in the provider direct patient care, or you know, serving the provider community or have served in the provider community, there's a level of understanding and awareness on this topic when it comes to clinical data exchange. What's interesting, and you can see it play out in mainstream media, where people don't understand the complexities of healthcare data, the lack of standards development over many years until recent times, and then the archaic nature of some of the health IT systems that we still rely on, including our wonderful fax machines and pagers. And so I would just simply say here that beyond the technical standardized codes and data and terminology and yada, 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 it's also general education on what is the problem. Because I think people have a general, I'm talking generally speaking, folks have a misunderstanding of how difficult it is to exchange data. People think it's, well, you're just like sending an email, right? I mean, how hard can it be? No, it's not that easy, right? And so I think there's got to be awareness generally about not just the technical limitations, but also what is breaking down? Why isn't this working? Because when folks talk to our lawmakers, understandably, a lot of them don't understand. They don't come from this space. Like, what's so difficult about this? So I do think there's an element of general education that we need to start considering as part of the HITECH of all these topics, which is how do we normalize conversation about the challenges beyond technically describing them?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. I mean, even among patient advocates who have looked at a lot of these issues related to clinical trials, you know, and sharing information and getting trials completed more quickly and information out to researchers and just advancing research, there's still this notion that it's all a plug-and-play world. And you drop in an EHR into a clinic, and bingo, the data suddenly goes everywhere, and why is it still taking many years to get things done?
Right.
So if people who have actually spent time studying the systems don't get it, it's not realistic to expect lawmakers and policymakers and others to implicitly understand the problems. So I totally agree with that, your assessment.
Christina, what do you think?
Yeah, I was just kind of reading over this again. One thing I want to just make sure that we put in throughout, and it'll probably be captured as the draft comes in, but, you know, we have the challenge of COVID-19 patient diagnosis. And I think that COVID, like, kind of was the catalyst that made us aware of these major gaps. But I think that we should talk about not just COVID throughout the report, but just any future pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's just an important point. And then when I look at the opportunities, I think these look great, but then the proposed recommended HITECH activities, I think kind of narrow it down a little bit. And when I think about like the data and information we need from a standards-based approach, of course, my USCDI hat goes on. And you know, we've got in this suggested HITECH activities, it's limited to the lab, but the opportunity that was identified was just reporting in general to public health. So I want to make sure that when we look at the HITECH activities, we're really looking broadly at what the most essential data in general is and not just limited to the lab.
I think that's a great idea.
Should we propose just add a sentence or two that say relevant use cases might be maternal health surveillance or opioid use, something along those lines.
I feel
to reinforce that notion that it's bigger than COVID.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm guessing that'll kind of come up. We've brought this up a couple of times as the report itself drafted. I mean, for the challenge, it's just like slash future pandemics. But like for the proposed recommended activities, maybe we are even more broader. Like we have this very specific guidance on necessary data sets for exchange with labs. And I think that it's more like a charge of looking at, I mean, we could even start with something like COVID as an example, but like the ISP task force, I forget exactly what their charges are, but they look at like what is the most impactful data that's needed and where are the gaps. And so I think it can be more broad. I don't think we need to get as specific, and I think the high tech will be able to kind of hash it out on like what exactly is needed. Does that make sense?
Yep, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
All right, the next one there is privacy and security for public health purposes, biosurveillance efforts, and contact tracing and telehealth and remote patient monitoring, facing, you know, a slew of privacy and security issues, and then questions about what's classified as HIPAA minimum necessary in public health, especially when collected via mobile devices outside of clinic setting. And so the opportunity there is the trade-offs of increasing interoperability, protecting privacy and security, and ensuring public safety during a COVID-19 pandemic. From a proposed activities, you know, what data can be collected and how, although I give a lot of credit to OCR and the ONC for putting out a number of bulletins that help all of us, particularly on the front lines, navigate some of this right now. So I know that that's already being done, but we could further clarify that and codify that, identify educational approaches that can be offered to improve privacy protections. I think it's a great suggestion. And then encourage the clinical workforce and patient education, which is, again, huge. We've talked about this numerous times. People taking charge of their own information. I would say that another activity, and it kind of ties back to general issues around the varying state laws, is, and we're starting to see this play out with the return to schools, where some states have offered various identification strategies to so that people can't, you know, there's not an ability to hold people liable for COVID-19 information one way or the other. And so certain school districts are now publicly announcing they're not going to share public health data generally with the public. If somebody presents a positive indicator or suspected, they're not going to tell anybody because they don't have to, and they're not going to be at worry of being in liability. So I think that there's some element here of what is minimum necessary for to do no harm, right? And if, just because it's what is the ethical and what's the legal boundaries there, and in the varying state laws, which is what I was getting towards, which is beginning to start to creep into this whole public health component. So I would say I would just add that as a bullet on this, which is the varying state laws and protections and how that impacts and how can we harmonize and get a standard guidance out there for what people should do.
I think that's an excellent point.
I agree, and should that go a little further and suggest that we identify the technologies that can help make that happen, you know, so that you don't wind up with another kind of stalling argument about what needs to be done?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Again, it's all about normalizing the conversation in very plain English so folks understand, you know, and again, I'm not saying this disparagingly. I don't expect people to understand if you haven't live this world, right? It's like, why is healthcare so broken? Well, it's where do you want me to start, right? So we've got to begin to normalize when it comes to a public health component, why this is so important, why it's so difficult, and why there has to be some level of data exchange, publicizing, and codifying so that everybody can understand the risks and make informed decisions. That's my soapbox.
Yep, I'm on board with that.
All right.
I agree.
All right, next on the hair. Vaccine tracking, which is going to become the next critical component. So pre-COVID-19, questions arose about whether the CDC might be tracking unimmunized populations where patients are obtaining vaccines and others can access that CDC data. And we have a blank section here, so we can begin to fill in these charts and help AI. If I want to see, will you go up again? I just want to make sure I understand the category. I forgot the category. Is this the gap or the opportunity? Yeah, challenge. Yeah, so the challenge is about vaccine tracking. And then, of course, the opportunity is there related to, you know, health IT, related to what a predictive analytics could be used to aggregate, analyze data, and anticipation of needs. And then, of course, we have proposed activities. So I would say let's define the challenge. Let's try to explain the challenge between the three of us about vaccines. And so, number one, I'll take a stab here. And I'm going to point to the high-tech FACA task force, the pediatric standards, basically, the recommended pediatric standards for EHR. I just butchered the name, Carolyn. The name just left my head. But that was that FACA that we had.
But you know which one you mean.
Yeah, that had a year ago. There were some great recommendations in there. And to give a real-world story, right, in New York State, there is a law in the books that states that for all the immunizations that go into a child's record, you know, when they go register for school, they have to be signed off, like, literally in, like, a pen, like ink, right? So it has to be almost handwritten ballpoint pen. I'm paraphrasing here. But there's no way to digitally do that unless you, you know, scan those records in and digitally list the signatures and the information. I mean, it's a mess. So there's this issue of vaccine tracking because every state seems to be doing it differently. And, again, that work group did a great job of breaking that down and going through component by component. But the issue with vaccine tracking is standards, communication, and then transmission of that data. And that's what it boils down to in my two cents.
Yeah, I think that's a really good summary of that aspect of the problem. Is the opportunity to try to work with ONC or other regulatory bodies to get some movement on adopting those pediatric guidelines that are now voluntary? I mean, we certainly know that within the pediatric environment that creates havoc, whether you have a pandemic going or not. So maybe this is an opportunity to try to get some movement there.
I think it's a very fair point. And I have a question for Christina, which is that is there a data classification or standard that vaccines could follow that is adopted under US CDI that we could simply propose, if it's not already there, I just don't recall off the top of my head, that vaccine data must be structured a certain way. So at least there's a standard data format for it versus it being in ballpoint pen.
I'm going into the ISO and seeing what data standards are, what my computer's acting up. yeah, I think... No, I think that's an excellent point. Sorry, I just lost.
Yeah. Well, we can come back to that. Yeah, if it's not there, then we could propose that under the US CDI standards, right? And we can fast track that criteria or propose it for fast tracking if necessary.
I mean, I know that like there's immunizations, but I think I think we can look at that. I like Carolyn's point of looking at the recommendations that were given under the pediatric section in our last round of things and pulling that forward. I think that's an excellent point.
I mean, okay. It has the advantage of having been well vetted by a group that involved not only high-tech members, but also some vendors and people who work in the field and experience that, like family physicians. You know, so we can avoid spending months evaluating the criteria because we've got sign off on them already.
That's right. The other thing I would love to hear is from maybe we could petition the EHRA community to let us know like what the vendors feel. Because I know that in talking to a number of them, you know, they struggle as well because they want to do a good job here and it's difficult for them to get the data, right? So maybe there's dimensions there that could inform us on beyond what we learned in that pediatric group that could help accelerate. We're just not thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, that may well be helpful and useful in getting us down the road.
Okay. So I think we came up with a few proposed and we outlined the challenge. So do we want to move on to the next section?
Yep, let's do it.
Yeah, and just to answer your question, Erin, I don't see anything in vaccines. A lot of immunizations, but no vaccine.
Vaccine, yeah, that's I thought, I just didn't want to say that. Okay, so that could be definitely something we propose at the next HITECH and see also how we could fast track it if folks feel the same way. And it would be a great way to showcase the power of USCDI and go back to the value of why 21st Century Cures proposed this to begin with years ago, right? So this is the whole point of this construct, is to identify these opportunities when they pop up and help give health IT a mechanism to get this going. So.
Yes, and I support any fast tracking through USCDI that HITECH takes on.
Please.
Let's go.
All right. That's right. Patient matching for public health purposes. My goodness gracious. How much time do we have left? Okay. The challenge is to capture information, particularly demographics, shared with commercial labs, and from contact tracing records and lack of a unique patient identifier. So let me try to articulate in Erin language here the challenge. You know, we're doing contact tracing on behalf of the Austin Public Health in partnership with Austin Public Health, UT Austin, that's my institution. And, you know, I had the joy and challenge and opportunity to set this up for us at DelMed and UT Health Austin. And we were recently recognized by the CDC as related to the CABO cohort, which is a public cohort that of students that thought it would be a great idea to charter a plane to Mexico and for spring break. And they all came back COVID positive or suspected. And so we were able to mitigate the risk of 60, 70, 80 kids and the people they could have gone in the community and infected because of rapid contact tracing. We have a dynamic epidemiology team that jumped all over this using the technology. But it was a doozy not being able to assign a unique patient identifier or some mechanism to say, this is Erin, you know, and Erin is represented by 12345 of the character numbers. I'm just making that up. And here his labs have come in whatever else. Luckily, because it was such a contained ecosystem, we were able to do sort of like a EMPI kind of thing and associate labs with them. But now, if you extrapolate this out, and now as I'm facing the return to UT Austin students coming here in a couple of weeks, and we're preparing for that, it is something because folks are coming in with labs from across the country. Folks are coming in to our hospitals that are from all over the place. You know, did you go through a drive-through in, you know, a neighboring state and bring your labs with you? How do I track that down? It is a lot of phone calling and manual efforts because we simply cannot correlate tests with patient Erin, with Erin's family, with tests patient Erin's family could have had. I mean, it is interesting. It is difficult. So that is a real-world example of some of the bugaboos that are really inhibiting our ability to deliver right place, right time, right care appropriately when it comes to UPIs. That's Erin's way of the challenge.
And I'm just thinking about all the aspects of this because you'll have some people being treated in places like county health departments where they may not even have an EHR to begin with. So you not only don't have bad interoperability, you don't even have the framework of pieces to try to be interoperable. You know, people coming from different parts of the country where implementations of EHRs are significantly different, even when you're talking about the same product.
Bingo.
It just seems like there are so many permutations of this topic. We could spend the rest of the year and next year trying to deal with it.
It could, but I may be able to sum up a little bit even easier. It'll be a little bit more general, but at least it's a little more concise, which is the definition of precision medicine stems from being accurate with right place, right time, right care, right? So that we're not doing duplicative work. I'm enabling the best outcomes and I am delivering you the highest quality possible for your comorbidity or condition, right? This is the beginnings of what precision medicine is about, to make sure that I'm really treating Aaron for the comorbidities, the issues that he has, you know, and that's where value-based care comes in, and the whole, all the data necessary around it, and the whole, you know, ACO model. All of that stuff starts from a point, which is I've identified Aaron and what his conditions are and what he absolutely needs that he may not even recognize he needs. He may have depression, no one knows, but we can pick that up. So this is so important, not just for public health, but just in general, that to me, this is about enabling and unlocking precision medicine with accuracy of the patient. That's how I would equate this. And yes, of course, there's a public health domain to this, but it's everything. I mean, this affects the whole continuum of care.
I just put a link in the chat that the House voted to overturn the unique patient identifier ban as well. That was July 31st.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that. I think that's the second time they've done that in recent history, and I applaud the Congress for trying to move the ball forward. Hopefully we can get the ball through.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that it's a, since it's getting more and more attention, it's an area that, I mean, HITECH should be, I think, a little bit more vocal on. We have been in our committee meetings, but we've identified it as an extremely important issue. That's an issue for, I mean, all three of our target areas. So I think it's a good time to just incorporate it into this report.
Yeah,
that's true. And I think there's also a fair counterbalance, because I do believe in listening to all sides here, which is, I know there's some privacy concerns about this. And I would love, I don't think I've ever seen a well-documented, what are the specific privacy concerns, right? Maybe there's something there about the harmonization of state laws to make this an easier thing. Because I think I would love to hear somebody that's a staunch advocate of saying, we do not want a UPI or strategy, and why, right? And get those really listed out. And I think the HITECH could really bring forward a concise, clean list of, okay, these are the, you know, I'm going to make this up, three examples of why we need it and three examples of why some feel we don't need it, and let the lawmakers and others have an educated perspective on this.
Well,
yeah,
Go ahead,
Carolyn.
I mean, I was going to say one of the prime considerations that comes up is that with the expanded use of AI and the desire to make more care algorithmic, we understand that there is bias built into a great deal of the AI that is in use, and that the way that we have built it and think about building it and using it enhances and furthers that bias rather than taking it out. And so the thinking is, when you can uniquely identify patients and be sure that you're following the same person across, you facilitate discrimination, because if those connections weren't being made, individuals might be less likely to be subject to that bias. And then, of course, there's the whole tracking of, if police have access to this information, and it's hard for us to know exactly which databases police can see, but, you know, on a fairly regular basis, there are articles in the news about all kinds of information the police can access through their agreements with companies like Palantir and Clearview and others. You know, is this a tool that will help us better treat patients, or is it a tool that will build out the infrastructure for controlling and suppressing people? For example, people who engage in peaceful protests over things like discrimination and law enforcement violence and so forth. Because when you uniquely identify someone, you not only create an opportunity to identify them as someone who could benefit from an enhanced treatment or a diagnosis opportunity, or as a member of a group that has historically been overlooked or excluded, but as a subject against whom you can apply oppressive practices.
I totally agree with you. Okay. So I think
there's
identified
two.
It. Yeah.
But yeah.
Do we feel that we've, okay, so we've articulated it, we've the opportunities, and then we propose some solutions here or activities for high tech, right? So we've, I think we've done this section.
Okay.
All right. Okay, new topic idea, international exchange of clinical data for public health purposes. Currently, countries are imposing significant restrictions on movement of people and goods to ensure public safety, in part due to lack of information about health status of travelers. Countries use a variety of information systems and languages to gather public health data, which can impede the flow of accurate, up-to-date health data. Interesting. Okay. I mean, does this go back to standards again? I mean, isn't this, that's what it's boiled down to, is right? I can't kick Aaron out to the sea of people. The data that's coming across from a public health perspective, there's no normalized set of standards. There's not like a SNOMED or a LOINC or some sort of like national codified standard, international standard of public health reporting. So vendors aren't, in their defense, they don't have to be, building systems that exchange data internationally, right? There's, I mean, the ICD-10 code from the World Health Organization on COVID just came out earlier this year, for goodness sake. So, I mean, there's to me, I think we can go into this, but does it boil back down to standards? What do you all think?
We know that there are some products that are deployed internationally. I think, for example, there's been discussions about Epic, you know, being in Denmark, and also, yeah, and also Denmark or Sweden. Okay. Too early, but in a Scandinavian country, I want to say it's been deployed in some places in the UK, and probably other countries. So we can start to see where there would be some shared infrastructural elements in the future going forward. Although obviously the implementation from one country to another won't be exactly the same. But I think you're probably right in the sense of data standardization would be a place to start, because otherwise you're left with regulations and laws, and that really is something that the health IT community probably can't influence, at least not very much or very effectively.
Yeah. You know, I think back to, in terms of something, you know, I'm going to jump to proposing ideas, and I think it's an important topic, and I can see where ONC was hinting at this and why they'd be hinting at SMART. I recall a conversation, it might have been during our policy committee days, where we had a phenomenal briefing from NIST, as well as from, I want to say it was not the Department of Defense, maybe it was Homeland Security, about how they were looking at standards. Oh, it was around biometric surveillance. I want to say this was the API FOCA, now it's coming back to me. And around how they had developed standards to make sure for international travel to keep people safe, right? To make sure that people that shouldn't be getting on airplanes, they shouldn't be getting on airplanes. I mean, it's a phenomenal job of standards development. This could be another opportunity where it's like, okay, you know, let's partner with, you know, Homeland Security or NIST or somebody and say, you know, if there's not proposed standards, maybe we could come up with an international proposed standards, because there's accreditation bodies that could do this, right? And high tech could help partner and inform them and say, these are what the important criteria would be to say an epidemiology team or, you know, a clinician or whatever, before you are able to step foot.
I didn't see that presentation, but I wish I had, just from the way you describe it.
I'll find it. That's a high tech. I mean, it was a great like discussion, right? And we had some great speakers.
Well, this is certainly on the emerging end rather than on the fully cooked problem spectrum. So maybe we can be a little more vague on it, or maybe this is one where we ask the high tech if they have any perspective in particular about it. Getting a broader range of wisdom, perhaps hearing from the perspective of other stakeholders, for example, insurance.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do when a treatment is theoretically covered, but the circumstances are perhaps not with your local provider, or it's I can see complications there where they may have thought down the road a bit about this problem or situation. And certainly we can hear more about what is a deal breaker and what makes it unfeasible now.
Yep.
Researchers may have something to say about it as well.
I agree. I would love to hear from some of the high tech that are just brilliant on some of these topics. And really
okay.
get the meat of it. I think this could be a really good one and a really good collaborative effort across agencies just to talk about and work together to solve this problem.
Let's make a note to call this out in the discussion with HITAC about the draft of the report at the first HITAC meeting where we get into more specifics and just, hey, we're working on it. We'll let you know soon.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe October. At that point, we would still have some runway to try to shape the problem or identify other activities, other influences that we're not thinking of right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly there's a lot of interest in international research along genomic stuff, personalized medicine. I think that even if we're not advancing some specific health IT items right now, we would be building an infrastructure down the road for that because of the research interest in this area and in working internationally.
I think that's an excellent point to include research.
Yeah, because that's where you get your treatments and the rest of your stuff from. So.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Should we move on?
Yep, do it.
Sounds good.
Okay. So now we're into the interoperability priority target area, one of our favorites. The landscape analysis topic is exchange of health data more broadly across the care continuum. There's our care continuum work group, Aaron.
Yep.
Gap is the interoperability needs to be increased across the broader care continuum. Yeah. Challenge. Long-term post-acute care, behavioral health, home and community-based service settings are limited in their ability to exchange data with other clinical providers, including social determinants of health data, in part due to EHR design. And I would argue that will just increase as we identify more access points for care, like school nurses or senior centers where people are doing wellness activities and so forth. So I think this one is just going to get bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
What are the opportunities?
Oh, the opportunities would be, again, it's the value equation of precision medicine, right? And making sure that if you're exchanging data across the continuum of care, I have the complete picture of what's going on with Aaron. And as well as I'm able then to get in front of developing conditions and comorbidities that perhaps I'm becoming diabetic or I have onset of depression or other, issues, dependencies that could be going on that we'd be able to pick up on if you have, a longitudinal view of what's going on with me. How many times does Aaron go to the gym a week, right? How many times does he go on his treadmill? How many times, is he going for physical therapy because he blew out his knee? I mean, whatever. Those things are important, right, versus just showing up in the inpatient area. Particularly in the COVID situation where we're doing, pre-admission testing before elective surgeries and things like that, it would be great to know this stuff because it kind of gives us a better picture of what your risk factors are going into a surgery of any sorts. So I think the opportunities are huge here.
Yeah, I agree. I think we could come up with like a laundry list of things, but it's even like being able to intervention, targeted care, like I said, come up with a huge list of opportunities for this one.
So what then would be the suggested high-tech activities?
I have one. So I saw that ARC released their PRISM tool, which is the patient-reported outcome tool, the source code to it, to be publicly available to try to encourage people to use at least commonly used PROs like the PROMIS and other patient-reported outcomes questionnaires, and to start unlocking the power of patient-reported outcomes, which has been shown that if you collect and really use and do well with, you can really improve the overall quality of care, because, again, it's all about getting data, right place, right time. So maybe inviting ARC to come speak to us and about what they're seeing on patient-reported outcomes and some of the work that's going on there they've been doing would be a great one. I want to say that Gopal posted something on LinkedIn about a week or two ago about that now being available via ARC. Okay.
One thought that occurs to me is also another potential recommended activity might be to identify new places where interoperability is becoming a challenge as a result of the way care is being shifted around and given in different settings due to COVID. I mean, certainly we hear about people not wanting to go to the clinic because they're afraid of becoming ill, but I think it also relates to funding sources. For example, if people lose their health insurance because they've lost their job, perhaps their child is now eligible for certain kinds of services at school, and they're instead of creating health information about the child at the pediatrician's office, they're doing it at the school. So what does that mean in terms of information flow? What does that, what's the intersection point with things like temperature readings, chronic health problems, potentially abuse that might normally be caught at the doctor's office or where the doctor would see what would be considered unusual patterns of health issues in a child that would create a potential concern about abuse in the home or someplace else where the child is regularly engaged. Just trying to think out loud here about all the way that shift for COVID wind up shifting other things too. And what is the broadest possible field we should be thinking about as we look at how to do interoperability better? You know, so we don't wind up excluding kinds of data we should be capturing or data streams that we haven't thought about before that would be relevant.
Yep.
So, Caroline, I think you just kind of read my mind on that, like looking at the broadest lens as I was looking at this and you were talking. You know, there's some really great stuff being done around collecting social determinants of health data and using some of the patient-reported outcomes, but also like just questionnaires and surveys to collect social determinants of health. And there has been a major focus on social determinants of health, which has been wonderful, especially within HL7's Gravity Project. And I'm wondering for this, if we don't look at kind of what's being done and then start to identify like where, not to focus on gravity, but like there's great work being done in a lot of the things that we just said in this conversation, starting with gravity and looking at how we're ensuring that as we build standards and approaches to collect data, we are putting on that broad lens and we're including groups like the schools and making sure that as we continue to expand, we're doing it in a smart way and identifying what we're missing today so that this can be implemented more broadly.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay. We go to the next section?
Sure.
All right.
Association between EHRs and patient safety. Impact of health IT on patient safety, that's the gap. I think we all have periodically seen the studies that come out now and then, but they're often looking at a very specific metric or a particular aspect, and so we don't have a good look at the whole field. The challenge, as we framed it here, is that a well-designed, properly implemented, and responsibly used EHR can improve patient safety by better supporting clinical workflows and decision-making, but EHRs can also bring in and create new patient safety risks, including sharing incorrect data. So the opportunity is to find factors that increase and decrease the safety of health IT that affect patient outcomes, and a proposed activity would be to review changes that could be made to the health IT cert program to support improvements to EHRs to support patient safety. I'm thinking we probably have more to say about either the opportunities or the recommended activities here, although this is a good start.
I'm trying to think how I'm going to phrase this. So I think, first of all, I'm a big person on definition, right? And so when someone says safety risk, I would love to actually come up with a standard definition that all of us can agree on of what does patient safety mean from a health IT perspective, right? Is it incorrect data being exchanged? Is the worst case scenario? Is it the outcome of a sentinel or near miss the worst case? Like what is it when we say let's reduce or mitigate safety risks, right? And I think the work that like MedStar did and others is phenomenal at pointing out a lot of the discrepancies between systems or implementations or whatever else. But I think for us to be able to really recommend an activity to go start looking at this beyond general research and other stuff, which would be fantastic, it's going to be hard to qualify because safety could mean so many different things to so many people. So to me, it would be almost a perhaps there's a work group specifically on this topic so that that definition could be defined. In my mind, again, I keep pointing at Christina's group with USCDI because of how great of a job they took such a complicated topic and broke it down into digestible chunks so that people, you could then have a qualified debate because you're all saying the same thing, right? And you could debate that, but you weren't coming at it from what is USCDI? It's like, what is a standard? Okay, they defined that. So to me, it almost seems like we've got to do the same thing with safety. What does health IT safety mean? And we could have patient advocates speak to that. We could have the EHRA speak to that. We could have, of course, providers and physicians speak to that. It would be an interesting work group.
It would be. So do we want to propose that, say, for 2021, ONC sets up a task force on this, and we try to define what patient safety is and identify all the areas where we currently fall short, where the technology doesn't support the definition, and from that basis try to come up with, say, a roadmap for addressing these things and looking to get us to a much more unified and better performing health IT in terms of safety by, I don't know, some date, 2023, whatever.
I think that's a great idea. And you could even invite folks like the Joint Commission and other folks to come in and talk about, or the Malcolm Baldrige group to say, what would this mean in their eyes, right? When you look at the overall certification and accreditation and even CMS accreditation, you know, what does health IT patient safety mean to them? And we could come up with some definition in that work group that really matches across all the accreditation bodies, which could really be a game changer for health IT, not just being tech, but really being about quality outcomes. So I think it could be a brilliant way. And now we have the tools in our tool belt to do something, right? You've got a certified health IT program, which has been up and running now for some time. You've got USCDI. You've got all these tools now, once we identify gaps, to go address those holes. So I think there's a lot of value here.
Maybe then what we want to recommend is that we make 2021 the year that ONC launches a comprehensive patient safety initiative, starting with all the things we've just talked about and identifying all the future work that needs to come out of all those efforts.
I think I believe so. Christina, what do you think?
I think it sounds great.
All right. Did that get captured, Michelle?
Yes.
Cool. Good. Is there anything else we want to say about this one?
Mm-mm.
Christina, Aaron?
I'm good.
Okay. Exchange of social determinants of health data. I think that there will be who very much like this one, including me.
Yeah, although didn't we just talk about this and the one before, like an exchange of health data more broadly, isn't this, or is this even more so about SDOH? I mean, we sort of talked about SDOH just a minute ago. I thought we did.
It was more of an example in the last one.
Okay.
What we've got here framed as a gap is business models across healthcare sectors do not yet support the capture and use of SDOH data due to lack of standards, data availability, patient matching challenges, and varying levels of technical maturity of community service providers' IT systems. If SDOH data are collected, they are usually documented as free text in the EHR, limiting the ability for data exchange across providers. And I would add, limiting their actual usability in terms of making clinical decisions and shared decision-making with patients and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So now we get to define the challenge, the opportunity, and the recommended activities. So I'd be really interested in hearing what you think, Christina, because I know you've worked quite a bit in this area and advocated for it.
Yeah, from the standards, it's been, honestly, I mean, I talk about it a lot, but it's been really exciting to see the progress of Gravity. I've been starting to work in Maryland, D.C. area on like implementing some standards around social determinants of health, and we're looking at the Gravity implementation guides, and it's been really educational, learning kind of like what exists and what doesn't and what providers would like to do. I think we're getting more and more attention of people looking to the national standards around social determinants of health, and I'm excited to see the acceleration happening in Gravity. I mean, they started with three domains that they're focusing on, like the really more details behind, but they just announced within the last week or so within the HL7 work group that they're going to start to build a framework on all of the domains so that organizations can start to implement and build over time. And I'm actually really excited about that approach. So from the standards, I think there is a lot of work being done that we can continue to point to Gravity Project and as we build out recommendations around how the business models work and how groups can start to implement, I think pointing to Gravity is extremely important. But I do think that there's still like the whole, once the standards exist, how do we build the infrastructure for sharing data, and that's where it comes up to the one, the topic on here that we have like two above, where it's just the exchange more broadly across the care continuum. But the standards piece is accelerating really nicely, and I mean, I'm personally excited about it. I guess, Aaron, to your point, this one and the one above do connect. So I focused on the standards work just now, but there are still other gaps on, like, how do you create the business models, how, like, there's other things we have on here, the patient matching challenges, varying levels of technical maturity. I mean, this is a major issue, especially if you look at, like, what the EHR systems have compared to maybe different systems that are that exist or don't exist within the community-based organizations, that also becomes a challenge.
And I guess
I totally agree.
And thinking about all of the building out of standards, and I would argue also the implementation aspects of that. I think there should be a parallel maybe technology isn't the right word for this, but a parallel effort to identify the way that SDOH information can be used to further discrimination and bias, for redlining, for withholding of treatment or in some way provisioning treatment and care in ways that are not the same across all people, and looking specifically being called upon to look at how these implementations occur and what can be done to mitigate them and what are the best practices for ensuring that they are not implemented in the first place. Because SDOH can cut both ways. I mean, someone looking at an EHR before a patient comes in for care can say, okay, I see this person lives in a part of the town where there is greater air pollution, and so I should be particularly thinking about asthma or other conditions, heart disease, you know, other things that we know are aggravated by that. Or they can make assumptions, well, this can't be changed because of where they live, so I'll focus on this other health problem instead because I only have 10 minutes to see them, and their problem list has 5 things on it. And in that way, well-intendedly, but nonetheless, removing the opportunity for care on a particular health condition where it is perhaps really, really needed on the basis that nothing can be done. So let's move on. I mean, certainly in that there is some change of the way that society thinks about what you do and don't deal with, and about the way the mindset of medicine in coming into the patient encounter. And some of those things will be harder to change, and they're not strictly in the health IT purview. But still, we can look at and think about and work to build systems that make it harder to do that and push people to do the right thing, which is to say, what are all the problems? Let's talk about what we can and can't change and how to mitigate some things that are harder to change, not just to walk away.
I think those are excellent points. I'm silent because I was listening.
Okay, good. I wondered for a minute if I cut off. If I was talking
No,
to
you
dinner.
Were good. You were making me think and reflect on some of the issues that
okay, good.
Doesn't make you happy, but, you know, you've got to push forward with, like, the technology piece.
Yep, no, well... Sometimes the confronting of these things and thinking about them is the hardest part, but we can't get beyond it if we don't.
I 100% agree with you.
Okay.
So we have a health equity discussion.
Yep.
How many more, so out of curiosity, how many more pages is this crosswalk?
Could you scroll down and we'll see, folks. We're at the bottom of page, is it 2, I guess? New topic area. There's
I'm on
three,
it. It's the 5 pages.
5, 6, 7, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
is this,
yeah.
Well, I mean, we're getting now close to 9:20, about 3.5 more minutes. Do you
yeah.
want to do a time check and do a public comment real quick, or just an opportunity for public comments? Because we talked about a heck of a lot this morning.
I'm trying to pull up my agenda. What time did we say we were going to do public comment?
Okay, so we actually got...
Let's do one more.
Minutes.
We'll finish
page one more.
Two.
So,
yep. All right, let's do it. All right. So
one more comment on this that's
yeah,
going to be really quick. We've talked about, like, a patient engagement. Well, there's the patient engagement playbook, and we've talked about revamping that or taking another look. I know it's a living, breathing document that ONC uses a lot. But I was wondering on this with social determinants of health, if we don't do something similar for kind of groups that are starting to want to incorporate social determinants of health into their larger strategy, where we come up with a framework or a kind of quote-unquote playbook of what exists from a technical perspective and where we've identified gaps and make it a little bit more robust. Because I see this as it just seems to be getting more and more attention, and more groups across the country are starting to focus on social determinants of health. So it could just be something worth a discussion of if we like provide more guidance to the industry on this topic, in a like with a little bit more attention. And maybe that exists somewhere else. So just a note.
I think it's a great idea.
Ditto. Okay.
Thanks, guys. I'll let us move on now.
No, I mean, it's a lot to think about, but it's all good.
Yeah, and especially some of the things that you just brought up, Carolyn, it's made me think, like, maybe this is a little more that we need to think through.
Well, and we can always think about making one of the activities a discussion, presentations at the Fall HITACH from folks who can talk about the downsides of collecting and reporting SDOH and all of the negative ways that those can be used to make care worse or decrease access or, you know, the other issues that are kind of the flip side of the benefits we can get from SDOH.
Yeah.
It may be there that we're not taking this nearly far enough and we just don't realize that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's push through one more and then we can say we finished page two. So this is a new topic idea. Increased health equity across populations, locations, and situations. So the gap would be non-traditional sources of health data exist that have not yet been mined or shared to support more equitable distribution of health resources. I can't see the top of the next column, but I'll say lack of interoperability makes it difficult to exchange. That's a challenge. Difficult to exchange data among some types of providers. For example, federally qualified health centers, public health agencies, social service organizations, school clinics, senior centers, and so on. The opportunity would be to identify non-traditional sources of health information that could be made interoperable, like primary care doctors get updates electronically from exercise classes for seniors and from school clinics, for example. And so we can identify some potential recommended HITACH activities, or we can add some more opportunities, or, you know, what think you all?
To me, it's about education on both the developer side as well as the patient side, right? The whole Stephen Covey principle, which is seek first to understand. I think that's the beginnings of health equity, and to me, it's leveling a playing field so that nobody feels, no group is inadvertently or advertently disadvantaged in access to their data and access to care, right place, right time. It's part of the whole quadruple aim. So to me, I think there are activities that we could do, which is bring in folks from a variety of organizations to talk about what disparity of care or disparity of access to care, looks like, and what some of those limiters are. Example, here in Austin, a big part of my community is the Latinx community, and making sure they have access to applications, data, information, their information in multiple languages is very important to them. Otherwise, it puts them at a disadvantage, right? And so even in this COVID-19 pandemic, that was a critical component as we were doing home monitoring and put out apps for the community and portals to do contact tracing, all this stuff. We had to make sure that we were taking all situations of account, including ADA and all sorts of things. So I think this could be a very important topic, particularly given circumstances that are going on culturally across this country right now. Carolyn, Christina?
I'm just absorbing.
Same here, but Aaron, I think you made excellent points.
Yep, I agree.
I also think this may be an opportunity, Carolyn, to engage in the high tech at the next high tech just due to the timeliness and say this is an important topic that we want to highlight and ask for their feedback on topics here. And I think given the melting pot of a society that we are, I would love to hear from the high tech, because the high tech is such a great representation of people across the whole spectrum, across all of industry, and say, are there specific activities that we can begin to help enable a level playing field with access to information or care or whatnot? I think that this may be a great topic for 5 minutes.
I really like that idea.
Yeah, me too. A lightning round of ideas.
Yep.
And that'll make it more palatable, too, than another discussion if we do a lightning round.
I agree.
Okay. Is there anything else on this idea we want to capture or bring forward?
No, I think it's a good start.
Okay. Well, then, it is 10:24, and we're doing public comment at 10:25, so we have beautifully landed that, Aaron and Christina. Can we have the public comment slide, please?
Great, thank you. Operator, can you open the line?
All lines are open.
Can you open the line for public comment, please?
If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
Are there any comments?
There are no comments.
Okay, thank you. Carolyn?
Okay. If we could go back to that slide we had just a second ago. There we go. So we've started down this road. We're well into interoperability, although I think there's a few more because that's always the big area. And we will take up this discussion again at our next meeting, which is about 6 weeks from now. It's mid-September. I think we got a lot of work done today and really thought through some issues that are important to us and started to formulate how to go forward with those and recommendations we can make to HITECH, which is the first step in getting them on the agenda and getting some movement. I'm really pleased that we were able to meet today and get started on this, and I'm excited about finishing it up and going forward with the new report. It feels like it's really starting to take shape, and it's going to have a lot of meat around things that we all have thought are important and continue to advocate for at the HITECH and elsewhere. And I hope you all have a wonderful summer now that we get a bit of a break.
All my safe ditto. Yeah, ditto, and be safe. Please, everybody, be safe.
Have fun bringing those college students back to campus, Aaron.
Yes, fun is the right word.
We know you'll do a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Everybody, please be safe. Take care of yourself and your loved ones and your friends and family. And like I said, I just can't overemphasize. Just please be safe.
Thanks, you too.
All right.
All right.
Did you have anything, Cassandra?
No, we're good. Thanks, Carolyn. Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, Christina.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.